The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Giannis!
So, Thiago missing for over a month, so how do Liverpool deal with replacing one of their best players? Is a new signing on the cards, or is the door open for Harvey Elliott to now step up? And as Liverpool begin their home campaign against Palace, will Anfield be a fortress this season? Don't forget, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of the articles on Liverpool, everything on the site, if you head to The Athletic. .com/Liverpool pod. And right now there is a special price, £1 a month for 6 months, if you go to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. I'm Steve Hoversaw with the Red Agenda, joined today by Kiva O'Neill and the Liverpool Echo's Liverpool writer Paul Gorst. Kiva, Thiago's injury, the worst possible time to lose a player of his influence.
Yeah, just pain, wasn't it? I guess you see him pull up. And I mean, he had an awful game. I mean, who didn't against Fulham? But yeah, it was disappointing because you kind of, you know, waiting for him to properly just kick on. I mean, the latter end of last season, you know, apart from injuries here and there, I think we started to see him really pull the strings for this Liverpool team. And like, there was times at Anfield and wherever else, I was watching him thinking, I'll never ever see a player play for Liverpool who's just like him, because he's just one of a kind and just gorgeous to watch, even in the warm-up, as we spoke about, wherever, you know, just watching Thiago hit a football is a joyous thing. So to see him, you know, now ruled out for several weeks is a big blow to Liverpool, given obviously Curtis Jones's injury, Naby Keita's had an illness. I think he must be over that now, but yeah, just... Yeah, you really wanted Thiago to have that season that you know he's capable of. But again, is he capable of it? Because, you know, injuries just seem to disrupt him when he gets going, which I think has been potentially a similar theme for sort of Naby Keita as well.
Liverpool, Paul, are at their very, very best when Thiago's in the team. But actually, it's not a huge surprise, is it, that he's injured? Because even at his previous club and even his time at Liverpool, he's always had these little niggling problems, some that have kept him out for, you know, bigger time frames.
Yes, I think it was his first start, wasn't it, when he pulled up for 3 months when he got injured against Everton from that Richarlison tackle. I think that was middle of October, and then it wasn't until the end of December before he returned to the team, and by then the wheels had kind of started coming off the title challenge. He only played 25 times in the Premier League last season. I think it was 24 in his first season. So he's not someone who is going to give you 35, 36 games a season. Perhaps understandable in a midfield, particularly like Jürgen Klopp's midfield, where you have to get through so much work, do so much running. But, you know, for all his gifts and his qualities, you wouldn't really count durability among them. And I suppose it's ditto for Naby Keita. And we've had, what, 4 years of him kind of, you know, on the cusp of doing something, and then a little setback here and there. And Thiago sadly seems to be from the similar mould. I mean, some of, as Kiva says, some of the performances last season were sublime, particularly against Manchester United at home. That was one of the best midfield displays I'd seen for years, really, probably since Steven Gerrard was stomping around Anfield. It really was that good. But then, you know, 50 minutes into the new season, he's pulling up with a hamstring injury that's going to keep him out for 4 to 6 weeks, depending on how well the treatment goes and whatever else. And it's just it's a shame, really, isn't it? Because he's great to watch. You know, as a neutral, you want to be watching these types of players. And from a Liverpool supporter's perspective, it's just a cruel blow.
So is it the intensity of Klopp's football, Kiva, that's the problem for him?
I wouldn't necessarily say so. I think if you sort of look back at his career, he's rarely hit the 30-game mark in the league. I think he did it once for Bayern, and obviously they play, I think, less games in the Bundesliga. So, you know, as Paul said, 24 games in the league last season, 25 this season. You're not really expecting to get much more out of him, other than you hope that you could get much, you know, some more out of him. I think the way he had to play probably in the first season, Liverpool adapted a lot more to him in the second season, and I feel like he adapted a lot more to Liverpool as well. Obviously, we know he loves to operate in that left half space, and he sort of is best when he's sort of got the ball and he's cutting over to the right and then playing a ball, you know, over to the right wing. That's when he's in his absolute pomp. And I think, you know, at Liverpool, he is doing a different role maybe in terms of having to press a little bit more. Obviously, we know how far forward the fullbacks go. He's sort of like a resistance band, isn't he, with Fabinho and Henderson maybe, if he starts the other side, doing a similar thing and dropping back and sort of helping out. So I don't think it's the intensity at all. This is a player who's obviously, you know, played for Bayern Munich for a long time and played for Spain, probably not as much as he would have liked to, but, you know, as well. So, and would have been a player, I think, looking forward to the World Cup and will be looking forward to the World Cup. But obviously this, you know, doesn't help his case, does it, I think, given at the Euros, I think he rarely featured for Spain. Which, you know, to the shock of us all, because we're just wanting to watch Thiago ball all day long, aren't we? But yeah, I don't think it's necessarily down to intensity, because you see him on his Instagram doing, like, you know, the home workouts, and they look intense anyway. I think just, you know, obviously just something's happened at the weekend, and yeah, just disappointing to see, I guess, on top of, you know, the injuries for him since he joined Liverpool, because obviously we know they broke the mould in terms of signing a 29-year-old player. It's not something they go about very often, and they did that because Thiago is, as I've said, one of a kind. He's a special player, and we're all just desperate to see that, aren't we? And it just feels like there's a bump in the road every so often that kind of, you know, disrupts that, and it just, yeah, it's gutting really, isn't it?
So 8 midfielders in the squad, and at this present moment only 4 are fit, might be 5 if Naby's back for the Palace game. Could you foresee this at all, Paul, or not? Because Jurgen was being asked these questions about whether another midfielder was needed.
I think he could have, yeah. I think there would be plenty of you not so much revelling in Thiago's injury, but certainly saying, well, we told you so, with regards to the injury history of several in the midfield. Oxlade-Chamberlain, of course, you know, hasn't had the pre-season to call his own, has he? You know, since that shot against Palace, he's pulled up and hasn't played since. Keita, okay, he was only ill, but again, he's someone who not exactly going to string 50 games together in a row, is he? Thiago's had his problems. Curtis Jones is a bit of a strange one. It looked quite serious when he was in that protective boot in the friendly against Strasbourg, and Klopp called it a stress reaction, whatever that means. Hopefully that was just a precaution, but certainly the profile of the midfielder would have been plenty. Would have been, and have been actually screaming at the top of the lungs that Liverpool needs someone with a bit more durability to come in. But difficult, really, because last season, towards the end of last season, the last 2 months, you know, between the beginning of April and the end of May, Liverpool played 16 times, and I can't remember any real injuries to anyone. Certainly Thiago and Fabinho, they seem to be virtually ever present for the big games when Klopp wanted them. And they're two-thirds of Liverpool's midfield who can probably, you know, challenge with any other midfield in world football. It's just the timing of it, really, in terms of Thiago pulling up 50 minutes into the new season, and then it gives ammunition to people who've been demanding more incomings all summer. But I actually think Kevin makes the point about the World Cup. I actually think that could be a good thing for Thiago, because he hasn't played for Spain since they got knocked out of the Euros, which is 13 months ago now. So he's probably facing an uphill battle to be in that squad anyway, and at a time when he's going to be out now for 4 to 6 weeks. Perhaps if he doesn't go the World Cup, that ultimately will be of Liverpool's benefit for him to almost get a second pre-season under his belt, if you like, during the months of November and December.
It's absolutely mad, isn't it, that he's not involved in Spain. I mean, obviously, it throws up the conversation about a late buy. You know, there'll be lots of fans keeping their eyes on it. I'm sure the club themselves have to, you know, be aware of this. Is there any likelihood, Kiva, of Liverpool dipping into the market, or is Jurgen completely confident in Harvey Elliott, Carvalho and the other squad members that he's got?
I think he is confident in them, isn't he? And, you know, he did sort of say, I think, was it earlier in pre-season, that, you know, if, you know, something happened and Liverpool needed to react, that they would. And fans were sort of clinging on to that, thinking, well, something's happened now. You know, Thiago's injured and Curtis Jones is out, and obviously Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. And when Naby Keita was ill, it felt like that injury sort of crisis was happening to the midfield. But obviously, you know, Liverpool aren't the type of club to do knee-jerk reactions. We know that they like to wait sort of for the targets, and, you know, whether that'll be next summer, for, you know, who fans are hoping for is obviously Jude Bellingham and You know, I think you just have to sort of wait and see. The sounds coming out of the club is like that they won't be doing anything. But again, you know, we've heard that one before, and then, you know, different things have unfolded after that. But yeah, I'm not too sure, to be honest, whether Liverpool signing a midfielder right now would, I think it would boost the fan base, because it seems like everyone on Twitter is asking for it. But, you know, there's still plenty of good players there, plenty of strength in depth. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if Liverpool can, you know, get through the season. One more injury, I think, might force the hand a bit more, because, you know, if someone like Jordan Henderson, for example, got injured, then he is, you know, he has had injury struggles in the past, but has seemed to be someone who's sort of shaken them off as well and been, like Paul said, that robust sort of figure in the midfield. And I think Fabinho is key as well. You know, he had a poor game against Fulham, but, you know, he's massively integral to this Liverpool team, because he does something that no one else really can, even, you know, seeing Jordan Henderson drop into that role or whoever it is. You know, I think Fabinho feels quite irreplaceable, doesn't he? So I guess we'll sort of see how it works as the month sort of pans out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would have to be a serious stage, wouldn't it, for Liverpool to dip into the market. Paul, on the Echo website, obviously there's a few lines about different players like Nunes from Sporting Lisbon or Jeremy Pino from Villarreal. Is it just online gossip? is there any strength in any of these links at the moment?
Yeah, well, as Kiva, I'm sure we'll be able to recall, we round up the various rumours and gossip from around the web, not me and our daily live blog, and you can see where Liverpool are kind of being linked to 101 different midfielders at the moment. It's no different, you know, when Liverpool have got full complements of players. They're just a club who seem to attract transfer interest, aren't they? At the moment, doesn't look as though anything's happening. As Kiva says, Klopp said that he was kind of waiting to see what happens. If nothing happened, then he was happy with his options. I think a lot of it's centred around perhaps Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in the final 12 months of his contract, and if there was something appealing on the table for both the club and him, maybe they'd look at bringing in someone then. But at the moment, it's all quiet on the Western Front. So I think Liverpool, for all the problems that they do have, you know, in the centre of midfield at the moment, I can't see them doing anything just yet. I think it'd have to be a really dire state of affairs for them to do something. You look at the defensive centre-back crisis of 2021. Liverpool literally had no centre-backs and still brought in Ozan Kabak late in the day and Ben Davis on a bit of a cup price deal. So it takes something really desperate for Liverpool to act and to panic, if you like. And Klopp said after the Fulham game that panicking is something he certainly wouldn't be doing.
Right, let's turn to Harvey Elliott then, a player who you followed him closely, Kiva. I remember when we were both at Blackburn Rovers and you were writing a piece on The Athletic about him during his rise there. Got a lot of first-team football for Blackburn. And now he's very much in the frame, isn't he? Could well be given a lot of minutes over the next month and an opportunity to show just how influential he could be.
Yeah, I think everyone was chatting about, obviously, Darwin Nunes when he came on against Fulham and changed the game. And I think Harvey Elliott was key to that as well, wasn't he, on the right? And just sort of, he seemed to light up Mo Salah, which is an incredible feat for a young footballer, isn't it, to come on the pitch and Mo Salah to start thinking, right, here we go, you know, I'm going to start getting some good little passes and good interaction, good 1-2s with this kid. Because, you know, Harvey Elliott is that player. He just brings something that you don't, you know, this ingenuity and, I don't know, just originality, I guess. And he's definitely one, I think, you know, every fan was like, he has to start the next game. And obviously we know he started last season, I think it was at the first four games. Then he obviously picks up that injury at Leeds, which I think then completely disrupted the season. I know he got back in, I mean, record time, you'd imagine. He got back really quickly after that injury. And then, he did feature, was involved in the squad, but it wasn't quite like we expected it to be. And I think this now is, you know, his chance to really, I guess, take hold and grab the opportunity again. Because, I mean, is it really an opportunity that, you know, he just massively deserves it anyway, doesn't he? Because you can just tell what an exciting footballer he is. And, you know, when you see him and the likes of Fabio Carvalho as well, and I just think Harvey's a player who is someone that defenders aren't necessarily used to as well, which is a good thing, but just someone who, like I said, you know, if he can bring Mo Salah to life in a different way and, you know, be interacting with Trent Alexander-Arnold on the right as well, and just bringing that little bit of bit of fire, bit of chemistry with those players at such a young age, then, I mean, yeah, I'm all for it. And I just think it's just so exciting to watch him play, isn't it? I think he'll be obviously playing for Liverpool for a long time to come, because we know he's a massive fan of the club. And yeah, just I think this is now his time to take the first team by storm.
Fearless, isn't he? Attacking midfield is where he works best, isn't he? James Pearce has written an article on The Athletic about whether it might trigger a change in formation, Paul. Do you think that's something in Klopp's mind now, particularly with Nunes being, you know, the focal point up front?
Do you know what? Like, quite a lot of people were talking to me, Jordan, pre-season about Liverpool changing to a 4-2-3-1, and I didn't really see it. I mean, to my mind, Klopp's only ever used that on a handful of occasions. I remember it once at Bournemouth. Kiva, you were there as well when Liverpool were chasing the game, and they went to a 4-2-3-1 the second half. The only other time I can remember it off the top of my head was when they drew 1-1 at the Etihad in 2020. So I was a little bit surprised to hear how many people were calling for it and who believed that it was going to happen. I mean, I suppose with Nunes, he does offer you that presence up top, doesn't he? It's somebody's going to pin defenders back and maybe stretch them with his runs in behind. Completely different to Roberto Firmino in terms of being a number nine, which could then, in theory, lead to Firmino kind of operating as a number 10, you know, as he used to. I thought he was way off the pace on Saturday, Firmino, and as soon as Nunes came on, you've seen the new dimension that Liverpool had in the final third. But at a time when they haven't got too many midfielders, you know, first choice starting midfielders, I suppose taking one out of the team means it relieves the burden, if nothing else. And then maybe you're looking at it, getting another attacker-minded midfielder, or, you know, a Firmino type, Carvalho, for example, you know, attacking midfielder, into the system. So maybe it's something they can look at and work on for a short period of time, needs must type of thing. But I don't really see it being a long-term strategy for Liverpool. I think Klopp is pretty much setting his ways in terms of the 4-3-3.
So Harvey, right side of a midfield in an attacking role. Let's just reflect on the Fulham game quickly, because Kiva, you wrote about this one, about the average age of the team playing for Liverpool. Something that really hadn't sprung to my mind until I read your piece, but fascinating, really. You were talking about how the average age was actually quite high for that game.
Yeah, I think we've seen a progression since Jurgen Klopp joined Liverpool from a relatively younger squad, and over the years obviously he's got the players that he's wanted, and those core players are getting older now. Obviously the likes of even Alisson, Van Dijk, Fabinho, you know, they are sort of, obviously Salah as well, getting, you know, 30 plus, which is nothing wrong with that. But obviously six players who started against Fulham were age 30 and above, which is the first time since I think 1994, was it? Which is, I mean, bizarre really, when you think it's took that long to have players over the age of 30. And I was kind of just looking at it like, is this a problem? And I don't really think it is, because like I said, that core group of players are getting older, but they're still all top of the game. Like, you wouldn't take Virgil van Dijk out of this Liverpool team, and you wouldn't take, I guess, Joel Matip. You know, many teams would take him in a heartbeat, wouldn't they? And, you know, the likes of Jordan Henderson, Thiago even, obviously when he's fit. Firmino, obviously, I doubt he might get as many starts now. Darwin's on the scene. But yeah, I think it is interesting. The players are getting older. Obviously, James Milner, the oldest and youngest all at the same time, isn't he? The way he come on and just, you know, brought that calm to Liverpool's midfield. And I guess he's a player we haven't really mentioned yet. We talk so much about the midfield, but, you know, he's in potentially what is to be his last season at Liverpool, and James Milner at the age of, is it 35, 36 now, he's just absolutely cruising and looked to be, I think towards the end of last season as well, one of Liverpool's best players. So we're talking about, you know, the struggles and the injuries, but he's someone that, you know, Liverpool can depend on, and someone, I don't know, is there anyone else out there like James Milner that can, you know, play left back, play right back, and then, you know, jump in wherever he's needed in the midfield. I think he's been a blessing to Liverpool, and I think will be in the weeks to come. But yeah, it is interesting as well. The Community Shield game, I think Liverpool had the oldest team on average since 1953 or something. It was like 29 years and so many days, which, you know, this team is getting older. But then you look at it, you've got Carvalho, Harvey Elliott, even Curtis Jones when he's fit, you know, those kinds of players. And Liverpool's sort of recruitment policy is to bring in players, I guess, just entering the peak ages or before that. So I don't think it's something, you know, fans should be worrying about anytime soon. But yeah, I think when your midfield starts to get a little bit older, maybe that's the one sort of concern, because I feel like centre-backs have that little bit more in them to go on and keep performance at that top level for longer. But I mean, James Milner is the caveat to all of that, isn't he?
It's bad when 30 is considered old, isn't it, Paul?
I'll let you know when I get there.
Hey, James Milner, that extra year they've given him, that could well be the best signing this season, Paul.
Do you know what? There were times last season, probably earlier in the season, when I seen Milner in Liverpool's midfield, and I was thinking, you know, a team of their ambitions, probably, maybe this is a bit too far now for Milner. But then, as Kiva says, the second half of the season, the last few, you know, sort of 6 weeks or so, he really came in and he was so dependable, so solid, and his quality as well. I remember the game at Southampton when it was a bit of a scratch team. I think Klopp had made 9 or 10 changes, not far removed from winning the FA Cup, and he was brilliant in midfield, really kind of got hold of the game, and a big reason that Liverpool ended up winning that, and it was a game they needed to. So I'm a little bit torn, really. On one hand, you think perhaps given his age and whatever else, and the club of Liverpool's ambitions, maybe they do need to start thinking about dwindling his game time. But then on the other hand, you think he's so experienced, he's so versatile, so dependable, that there is there's still a place for him in the squad. Perhaps maybe not in the team if everyone's fit and ready for selection, but as we've already discussed, that's really the case, is it?
Yeah, he's going to play a role, isn't he, in various ways this season. I saw an interview that he did with Sky where he was talking about Nunes and how unpredictable he is, Kiva, and talking of, you know, his hard work, the runs he makes, how desperate he is to get his head on the ball. It got me even more excited thinking this lad, you know, could make his debut on Monday, his home debut.
Yeah, I think, you know, when he tried that sort of back heel flick the first time, it was like, all right, you probably shouldn't have tried that then, just shoot. That was my sort of initial reaction. And then he obviously tries it again straight after, which I think just showed the level of confidence in him to be like, well, I didn't get it right the first time, I'm going to try it again now and get it right. You know, like, practice makes perfect. I think that's what I liked about his performance. And just, I mean, I think, did he record the fastest? Like, you know, he's sprinting quicker than anyone in the Premier League this weekend. And when you look at Erling Haaland's goal and how it looked like he was like, had giant strides and was so quick against West Ham for Man City. I was quite shocked that Nunes beat him in for the top speed, because, you know, he looks so quick. So we know he's got that speed, and obviously the heading ability, I think, will come to fruition, given Mo Salah will, I think, like to put a few crosses in himself. I think Mo Salah's assists this season could go up even higher. I think, did he get 16 last season? I think he understands the Nunes is a player that, you know, he can definitely rack up his assists playing next to, but obviously he's Mo Salah, so he'll want to score plenty himself as well. But yeah, just really exciting signing. I think to see him at Anfield from the start will be, you know, a great occasion for us all, for the fans against Crystal Palace, because I think you just want to see what he's about for the whole game. And I do think there's still moments he needs to iron out, and that's why he probably didn't start against Fulham. Just because we see that with Jurgen Klopp signings, they don't always come straight into the team. Obviously, we know Luis Diaz did, but I guess that was a bit different. I think he still wants to coach them and sort of teach them the art of the press, and I guess, you know, to get back and, you know, your other duties away from just being a striker, because that comes so natural to him. Because I think, did Fulham hit the post or something after he'd sort of, did he give away the ball or didn't press strong enough? And then obviously we know he completely changed the game for Liverpool and the game was not going in their favour. So I do think when he sort of irons out those things as well, we're just going to see just such an all-round player, and one who's, you know, hopefully going to score plenty of goals for Liverpool. And yeah, he just looks so happy, doesn't he? I think that's the best thing about him. When he scores or assists, you can tell he's a player that is just going to be absolutely buzzing. Because I think, was it Diaz sort of shouting him like, come on, let's go back. Like, we need to win this. And he just sort of like wanted that moment with the fans after scoring his goal. And it was like, you know, I think the fans take to that. They enjoy that in a player when a player loves them. And you could see that straight away from the Community Shield game. You know, he doesn't have a chant yet, but he was shouting his name, Nunes, Nunes, Nunes. Because, you know, he's someone that they should be excited about and will be for a long time to come. And, you know, if he continues sort of just showing us what he has in the most recent sort of glimpses of his quality, then, you know, it won't be long before he's getting a proper chant from the Kop. And, yeah, they adore him already, it seems.
It looks like he's been part of the family for ages, doesn't it? I mean, with Sadio going, I was a big Sadio fan. I sort of thought it's going to be hard to fill the void, but it seems, and I don't know whether I'm speaking too soon, that, you know, that the blend will fit into place quite quickly, Paul.
Yeah, I think it might take some time before he's completely up to speed. One or two loose touches. There's a time when I think he ran with the defender and he stumbled, and, you know, the rough edges to smooth there, which is to be expected. You know, he's only just turned 23. He's not had years and years of experience at the top level, so he's raw. But I think you can see that while he is kind of smoothing those edges out, developing his game, he's going to score. He's a predator, isn't he? He's a poacher. He had Fulham under all kinds of trouble last week when he came on. You know, Tim Ream had one off the line. There was another one that he kind of flashed across goal. Good save from the keeper with the first back heel, and then he obviously gets his goal with the second one, and probably could have had another couple, to be honest. There was one where he headed it back to Diaz when he maybe could have went for goal himself, and he just looks a threat. You know, he's raw, but he looks like he will score goals. So Mane will be a big miss. I think Diaz needs to step up in terms of the goal scoring contributions, but so far so good with Nunes. He looks a player, and it's going to be interesting to see how this Liverpool team develop with a kind of archetypal number nine leading the line.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and I'm back with some good news. I'll be hosting the Athletic Football Podcast four times a week. I'll be joined by the likes of Adam Crafton, David Ornstein, Flo Lloyd-Hughes, Matt Slater, and plenty more of The Athletic's brilliant journalists. And together, we'll bring you the best insight into the biggest football stories. So that's every single week, Monday to Thursday. And if you like what we do, then please follow and subscribe to The Athletic Football Podcast in all the usual places.
Anfield was pretty impregnable last season, Kiva, wasn't it? Obviously, only a few points dropped there. That's got to be the basis for things this season. And I'm sure the players, having drawn that first game, it probably felt like a bit of a loss to them, will want to put things right against Crystal Palace.
I think a draw for this Liverpool team just does feel like a loss, especially going head-to-head with Man City as they have in recent seasons. I think dropping points is always going to be disappointing for them, and kind of disappointing to watch because the quality that they've got and how they go about things, you don't really expect them to lose. Similar when you watch Man City, and you know, you don't really expect them to drop points. So yeah, Anfield I think will be key to Liverpool's success this season. I mean, there's just a great feeling around the place. I remember going when there wasn't that feeling, and when it's there, it is special. And that feeling's been around for a long time now. You know, you go into Anfield for a few years and really coming away and Liverpool have lost, really coming away and, you know, Liverpool have drawn. They just pick up wins at home, and I think that, you know, has been integral to, you know, what they've built in their away form as well. And we know how much fun they usually like to have on the road. But yeah, I think Anfield's that sort of staple place that Liverpool have made their own, even though it's their home, because it hasn't always felt like that. You know, it felt like probably, I guess, what Man United are maybe going through now with Old Trafford. The sides can go there and, you know, beat them. And growing up, we would have never thought, you know, many teams would have gone to Old Trafford and won. And I feel like at Anfield, it didn't always, I guess, have that. But now it is, you know, to use the cliche, I guess it is a fortress, isn't it? And I think that's enjoyable for the match day fan, isn't it? Knowing that you're going and you're pretty confident that Liverpool are gonna win. But obviously there've been other times as well, like I guess the Spurs game at the end of last season, that was where sort of the deflation after that was pretty grim, wasn't it? But obviously, you know, we're at the start of a new season, it just feels like, you know, Monday night football, Liverpool, I guess not under the lights because of the late night, still sort of here, aren't they? We're still getting away with summer. hopefully a warm night, t-shirts on the Kop, that's what you love to see.
T-shirts in the press box with Gorsi. Is this the season, Paul? Is it going to happen?
To win the thing?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't win the league, they're going to finish second, aren't they? I think City and Liverpool have kind of established themselves now as the two dominant teams in English football. And, you know, it's not just one season. It's years of evidence now. I mean, Liverpool have recorded three tallies over 90 in the last four seasons, and the lowest of those was 92. They obviously won the league with 99 and finished second with, was it 96 or 97? And City themselves done the exact same thing. 100 points, was it 2018? Won the league again with points tallies in the 90s. So when I hear, you know, pundits and the like tipping other teams to kind of usurp Liverpool and City, it kind of baffles me, because I just think this is years of evidence that have been built up. It's not something that you can dismiss as a good season or whatever, because these two are undoubtedly the top two in probably in world football, to be honest. We know Real Madrid have won the Champions League and whatever else, but in terms of consistency over years, it's City and Liverpool, isn't it? So it's going to be tight again. Why can't they do it? Of course, they haven't started ideally with that draw at Fulham, but why not? You know, there's not much to separate between City and Liverpool, and I just think perhaps City have got more kind of intangibles as to how it affect them, with no Sterling, no Jesus, Bernardo Silva could potentially be leaving, no Zinchenko, whereas Liverpool have really only got to kind of compensate for that loss of Sadio Mane, which of course is a big one, but you know, it's probably less across the squad than City's is.
Right, let's finish the pod with just a line each on the two Connors. So Kiva can do Connor Bradley against Bolton, for Bolton against Salford, I should say.
Yeah, I guess he scored a cracker, didn't he? A worldie, if you like. Kind of what you expect from him. You know, I think this will be important for him, given that obviously he's been, you know, in and around the first team, playing a lot of academy football as well. I mean, already a Northern Ireland international. Certainly got that quality going forward, and defensively as well. I think he's shown that in glimpses with the first team. And yeah, I think this is a really important move for him now, just to sort of, you know, get that professional experience. And obviously Calvin Ramsey's just joined the club as well. So, you know, where does he want to sit when he comes, you know, to pre-season next year? Does he want to be, you know, fighting it out and being understudy to Trent and, you know, really fighting there? Or does he want to be, I guess, behind Calvin Ramsey? And I think that goal kind of showed you where he wants to be next season. And he's certainly got the quality to be. So someone that, you know, look forward to maybe getting down to Bolton and getting to watch him play, because, yeah, I think a lot of the loanees have already had a good little start, haven't they? I think Leighton Clarkson scored a worldie within, you know, I think a few hours of signing for Aberdeen. So, yeah, there's plenty of players to keep an eye on this season in terms of loanees from Liverpool, and Conor Bradley is right up there.
Absolutely brilliant goal. And Connor Cody, one of the nicest men in football, but wearing an Everton shirt. What do we think, Paul?
Bit of an interesting move for him in terms of Everton coming off the season they've just had. Wolves under Bruno Lage seemed to be a team who were looking to punch above the weight, perhaps. But I think there was maybe something behind the scenes there. I read Cody's comments saying that he just felt something wasn't right with the manager coming back from pre-season. I think he wants to switch to a back four as opposed to a back five. And Cody's somebody who wants to be playing football. He really misses games, being an ever-present, hasn't he, for Wolves? Certainly in the Premier League over the last few years. So he's looking to continue playing, I guess. So it seemed initially a bit of an interesting move from his perspective. But I think Everton have got themselves a really solid, dependable centre-back there, and probably someone who they need, given Yerry Mina is often on the injured and reserve list.
Yeah, brilliant player, brilliant lad as well. It's great signing for Everton, and good luck to him as well. Right, don't forget, check out the articles on The Athletic. Kiva's written about Thiago, the distributor, what Liverpool will miss. There's all sorts of other stuff on there as well. Check it out right now. Special offer as well, £1 a month for 6 months. Thank you to Paul Gorse from the Liverpool Echo, and Kiva as well. And we'll see you next time on the Red Agenda.